You're listening to FMGRadio.com. Welcome to Generation Reinvention, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Future, with your host, Brent Green.
Welcome back to Generation Reinvention. We're pleased to have you back with us again today. You know, we boomers are thinking a lot about what happens next. One area we're thinking about is retirement and retirement living. Many of us are planning for a time when successful aging includes an ideal location with well-designed lifestyle amenities. While the rich can afford tailored specifications, middle-class boomers must look elsewhere, and they need not look further than a community conceived by this week's guest. Boomers have become aware that too much of mainstream television also doesn't necessarily target their entertainment preferences. So wouldn't it be great if someone understood how boomers and seniors want to live and be entertained through relevant television? Well, someone has. John Erickson is founder of Erickson Retirement Communities. This includes 20 active adult communities housing more than 23,000 50-plus adults in 11 states. His communities manifest his six pillars of successful aging, which is really a paradigm shift in adult housing. And we're going to be talking about that in the program. He could have stopped there. Obviously, starting retirement communities all over the country would keep a man busy. But instead, he took what he understood about aging adults and launched cable network Retirement Living TV to provide a new voice to a generation largely ignored by television. Launching RLTV was a natural extension of John's interest in the spirit of community among the 55-plus set. By broadcasting a positive image of the true lives of boomers and seniors, he also intends to change America's views of aging. Certainly a goal and a motivation I share. So I'd like to welcome John Erickson to the program today. Thanks a lot for joining us today, John.
Well, Brent, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Let me tell our listeners a little bit about your background. For three decades, John Erickson envisioned and built innovative communities for seniors, understanding before most that an active social lifestyle and access to good health care were essential for the mental and physical health of seniors. So as I mentioned, he founded Erickson Retirement Communities. The company operates 20 retirement communities, as I mentioned, in 11 states. And his company has been named one of the best 100 places to work for by Fortune magazine. He then launched Retirement Living TV in 2006 to provide a new voice to a generation largely ignored by traditional television media. He traces his interest in senior lifestyles all the way back to the 70s when he worked for a real estate developer in Florida building leisure housing developments. It was the community aspect of those projects that intrigued John. He observed the way social webs enriched residents' lives. He owes some of the success of his communities to discovering the six pillars of successful aging. We're going to be talking about that. The ingredients include exercise, diet, spiritual well-being, a comprehensive wellness and health care plan, and financial security. The final ingredient is social structure. In launching Retirement Life TV, he saw this as a natural extension of the focus of the previous 30 years. As he said recently, seniors are an engaged, passionate group who are deeply concerned about the legacy they're leaving their grandchildren. He also saw it important that we continue to perpetuate a positive image of the lives of seniors as they are living today. So, John, thanks again for joining the program. It is very much a privilege to have you with us. And I'd like to begin talking a little bit about Erickson Retirement Communities. Could you share a little of the personal background about what motivated you to start the communities and how you got started and where it's been leading you?
Well, I got started back in the early 70s. I was doing some leisure housing for early retirees that were moving to Florida from the Northeast to get to sunnier weather and better climate. And I noticed that for every person that moved down, there was probably 20 that stayed home in the North for good reasons, families, churches, grandchildren, you name it. But the community values of where they lived was more important than them coming to Florida. And I thought, well, what we really need to do is rethink 10, 15 years out the value of those people that stayed home getting into a stronger social environment and applying services that you might need as you get older. One of the things that I did observe was that we've done a very poor job of planning for being older. We just presumed that that would not happen, and then we developed sort of a negative ageism bias in our country to let's not talk about our later years. And the reality is now people can spend 25 or 30 years in a post-retirement leisure environment, and we have huge ways to add quality to their life. And so this was my goal, was to say, all right, how do I come up with a program that attacks the quality side of aging to give people a more fulfilled life? And the good thing about it was I was able to attract more than 30,000 residents that came alongside, and they were like my consultants. They would tell you every day what it would take to make their life better. So I spent the last 30 years taking their advice, building systems and programs that really enhances the quality of living for senior America.
So you know,
that's what our communities are all about.
That story hits home very personally because my father spent his career with the Federal Housing Administration and was called upon to provide mortgage financing for a yet untested concept called the CCRC, or Continuing Care Retirement Community. And he worked through the bureaucracy of the federal government because he had a passion about it, and helped get the mortgage financing for one of the nation's first CCRCs in Topeka, Kansas, which is called Brewster Place and is still an active CCRC today. But my own father did not completely understand that, you know, life would not continue going on the older he got. His vision was that he could just retire gracefully in his own home with my mother until the caretaking had to start. And then he became pretty much the victim of what he hoped to not have happen for his peers. So,
I've witnessed this many, many times over. And one of it is bad messaging. You know, we really message to seniors, stay at home, hang on, it's a slippery slope, don't put a foot, you know, into a retirement community, because that's like stepping into God's waiting room. We give people the worst possible advice, because the reality is many years before we keep telling them to stay home, they're better off making and planning decisions that give them a higher quality of living. You mentioned those six pillars of, better eating, better exercise. Well, the single family home is not the promotional place to create quality in any of those categories. It's very isolating. You live in a cold Midwestern city with snow and ice and wind. You don't go out very often. You're walking 30 feet from the kitchen to the living room. You're eating leftovers. And the social structure that you claim you have is with your wife of 55 years, and your conversations are so, repetitive that you don't even light up a neuron in each other's brains when you talk, because you already know what the other person says. And that's not social structure. And then you talk about healthcare and the confinement of trying for two people in their 70s or 80s trying to negotiate between five and six doctors in a community. And then, you take the spiritual attitude of how do you feel about yourself and where you're going? Are you struggling and fighting and just standing there with white knuckles holding on? Or are you enjoying life and are you having a sense of fulfillment? And those are the things that I was able to attack in the last 30 years. And we created, what I would consider the utopian model, to say if you had all of the circumstances that you could put together to create the optimal way for aging, how would you do it? And we created a mini university for seniors, where we would collect 2,000 to 3,000 people that were in their mid-70s and bring them back like they were in college and give them a life as if they lived on a permanent cruise ship, and then add the service side that they might need as they get older. And that's what we created over and over again, as these 3,000-person sort of senior universities. And that's what inspires people to reengage into lifetime learning, into, you know, joining college classes, you know, learning new languages, starting to travel, and taking up things they might not have done all their life, like painting and artwork and stuff of this type. So you see people that would normally be hanging on with white knuckles, waiting for the winter to get over, and hopefully they can get to their mailbox again. And instead, you see people just flourishing. And that was the goal I wanted to create, to say, how do you transform this entire quality? The problem is most of the messaging in America is negative and telling people not to make these positive choices.
Well, in a sense, I'm thinking of you as a retirement living myth buster, because so much of our parents' generation, the World War II generation or the GI generation, were introduced to retirement in kind of a mythological way. In other words, go enjoy your golden years, you know, play golf into the sunset, and thank you very much for your time and attention. We appreciate your service, but we really don't need you to be engaged anymore. And it sounds to me like one of the things that you've definitely accomplished is to help a lot more people recognize the vitality and importance of this time of life.
Well, engagement is what keeps us alive and vibrant. And so, yeah, it was very important. And the guy in Chicago may have a garage full of woodworking tools that he used 30 years ago, but he's not going to go out there and do those. But if you're in a community with a giant woodwork shop and you're building cabinets for Habitat for Humanity and doing toys for tots at Christmas, now it's fun to go down to the woodwork shop with other people and create value. And those are the differences that occur between a vibrant university-level social structure and toughing it out at home with a, you know, an abandoned garage full of tools.
I certainly agree with that point of view. I saw it again with my own father. I saw a very vital man growing increasingly marginalized as he aged, and the depression that created. And as a follow-up note, when he finally figured out that Brewster Place, the place that he helped get mortgage financing for and guided the building of, would possibly be the place for he and my mother to finally spend their final years, my mother had gotten too ill, and therefore they could not be admitted to that particular community at that point, which was enormously frustrating. Well, looking forward, what do you think needs to change about the product, if you will, of retirement housing as it exists today, certainly at Erickson Retirement Communities, that might better fit the needs of boomers, or do we need to change anything as far as you're concerned?
Oh, I've seen a big transition in the last 25 years. 25 years ago, when people built a retirement community, you didn't need a fitness center. A pool was considered a luxury. But if you watched the pattern, and that was back when we told people, take it easy, don't overdo it. But what we found out was that was really bad advice, along with the advice to stay home. The reality is you live in a use-it-or-lose-it world. And so what we should have been telling people is don't take it easy. Stay aggressive, stay active, stay exercising. And so I've seen that pendulum swing to where now the fitness centers we build are never big enough. You have to build a second one. The pools aren't long enough. You need longer pools and more space. And it just so the willingness of the generations to take more charge of their destiny is growing dramatically. And that's going to change the face of retirement in the United States over the next 20 years. The biggest problem that I see is that the optimal environment to do this is in the large real estate format. But you couldn't build enough housing if you tried. You know, even if you had unlimited resources sponsored by the federal government, the chances of putting enough housing together to get the mid-70s, the mid-retirement age, you know, retiree into a better environment, we just couldn't do it. The building period is too long, the cycle, the housing market, everything else. So we're going to have to now devise alternatives to even the optimal retirement that we put together. And I see some of that occurring. there's some growth of what they call naturally occurring retirement communities.
Yes, NORCs.
NORCs, Capitol Hill, Beacon Hill in Boston. Seniors have moved back into areas that were very yuppie 20 years ago, and they're setting up their own service structure for each other. Hmm. And they're sharing healthcare resources and home health support and maintenance and things of this type. That's probably another big growth alternative that's out there that's going to start blossoming in all the major cities.
Well, that's certainly something that I've been seeing in my research and writing, and that is there's entirely new models of ways in which to experience the so-called retirement lifestyle, and it's an exciting evolution and revolution. We could spend an entire hour, I am convinced already, about this one topic, but there's so many other things we'd like to discuss, so we're going to take a short break. And remember, if you'd like to learn more about Erickson Retirement Communities, you can visit the website at erickson.com, E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N.com. And when we come back, I'm going to start asking John some questions about retirement living television. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back. This is Brent Green. You are listening to Generation Reinvention. Today our guest is John Erickson, who is the founder of Erickson Retirement Communities and also Retirement Life Television. And we're covering a lot of far-ranging issues today. John, tell me a little bit about what motivated you to move forward with Retirement Life Television and inspire and enhance new perceptions of aging. That seems to be a fundamental motivation in what I've read about the kind of the design of the network. So could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Okay, so Brent, I'm 15 years into making this better life for seniors in these large campuses. And I found out a couple of things. One is, if you have 3,000 people on a campus, you're not going to know everybody. But it's kind of fun to know something about everybody. And all the clubs that they form for the veterans and the people that want to sail model yachts on the lakes or people that are contributing to food kitchens and whatever, but there's tons of activity. Well, I put little miniature community television stations in each of these campuses, and the residents came in. They learned how to run cameras and switching equipment, and they actually produce their own hometown network.
Mm, I see.
Well, what I realized was no one gives a positive image about how people are living as they get older. And so I thought, actually, the bigger value isn't the hometown community channel that I'm creating at each of the campuses, but would be to develop an entire TV network that would focus on better quality of life for seniors and positively represent that aging is not a disease, it's a healthy reality, and that we ought to be accepting. We ought to also be in charge of our own outcomes as best we can. And so I decided to take this little hometown project and see if I couldn't grow it into a national network and focus on the same thing that I was doing in housing, but now let's do it through better communication and television, bring people together in a lifestyle space about better quality of living as you get older. And that was my goal, started 4 or 5 years ago. It's not easy to get into the TV business.
I know that.
It's very controlled as to where you get your distribution and the rest. But I had a good meeting at one point with Comcast, and they liked the idea and said, you come alongside, we'll get a few hours a day, you test your aggregation of your audience against what we're doing on our network, and we'll see how it goes. And at the end of a year, we were way ahead of them. The midday time, there were a number of days when our little network on the Eastern Seaboard had more viewers than CNN and Fox News.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And so they were sitting there saying, wow, you mean this audience really is willing to aggregate? And what they want to aggregate around are their issues. Their issues about politics, their issues about healthcare, finance, travel, adventure. And so we put together shows that were sort of the magazine format of a Today show, mm-hmm. but really dealing with senior issues. Who's volunteering in the community? Who's leading things that they never were involved in before? Who's got vision and who's sharing? And then what support systems do you need? We had shows about teaching people to do better financial planning. We had a great series of Healthline shows that talk about good chronic disease management, which most people will have at that age. And we would go through, and then shows to inspire people to the adventure side of life. Where are you going to cruise to or travel to? What haven't you seen in the world that would really be worth seeing? And the channel's taken off. We've had really good reception. Comcast has been one of our partners, and this was before their involvement with the NBC Universal merger, and so now between the size of their distribution and representing a quarter of all broadcast media, it's a big thing. And I think now we'll get the chance here to really open up communications channels to seniors all across America.
Well, as I spent some time learning a little bit more about RL.TV, which is where our listeners can go to find out more. Also, there's an incredible array of programming. I noticed, of course, that you're in partnership with AARP and you're broadcasting their television show, My Generation, and Inside E Street.
That's right.
And then you have programming on romance, on the art of living. Veteran broadcaster John Palmer does a daily show called Encore, the Florence Henderson show, everybody's favorite mom from the early days of boomer television. You cover issues like fraud. I mean, with another program, a Victory Garden for people that are into gardening. I mean, whole health. The array is what I would say holistic, which obviously reflects your vision of the six pillars of aging. To touch
and
upon
the attitude of traditional media was that these people should just stay at home, Mercy Row reruns on their TV all day, and they should really do. And the reality was they wanted to be engaged. They want to be inspired. They want to be connected. And I'm not going to say they're going to do that 24 hours a day, but a lot of their day, they were looking for something that traditional media was not going to give them. And that's the success of Retirement Living TV.
Well, one of the stated motivations, and it's kind of is embodied in almost everything you've done and are doing, is the idea of improving and enhancing the perceptions of aging. And, the boomers are aging. Meryl Streep, 61, Mick Jagger, Bruce Springsteen, James Cameron, even though he's a young 55. Is the perceptions of aging bound to improve with all of these boomer icons reaching this stage of life, or do we really still need to focus and make sure that we tell the story and tell it the way of people who are aging in very vital ways?
I think that the sheer volume of the number of people that are moving into this tsunami of aging will change the way everybody looks at it. It after the war, World War II, and we went into the beginning of the baby boom, it began to change society from all those little kids running around to what do you do with schools, what happens at the university, what goes on in the workplace. So boomers have defined it. The thing that amazes me is that the advertising, the media, the people that do the traditional stuff, they always hold back. They think they're stuck in a time warp. And instead of realizing that these people have redefined every place that they've been, and they'll redefine this next phase of life. And I think we're going to see a lot of that redefinition from boomers entering into their senior years. And so the natural change will be towards their volunteerism, their commitment, their contributions to the community. I refer to it as on retirement living as their freedom years, because this is the time you get to actually become or be whoever you wanted to be. If you want to be a crotchety old person, okay, you can be crotchety. But if you want to be a community leader and work in volunteer programs and you have causes that you believed in, political, social, you name it, you'll get involved in those, and that will start to express who you really are. And that's what I think most people want when they get older, is the freedom to express themselves and say, that's what I believe about myself, and that's what I believe about the life I lived. I think we're seeing some of that in this Tea Party movement. They're looking back, the whole, and I'm not going to go off into a political thing here, but America's looking back and saying, spending money like drunken sailors at a time when we're hurting just doesn't make sense. That's not the way I've lived my life. And so how does the government think that they can live their life that way? And people are saying, stop, you all have me worried to death.
Yep,
you're going to see more and more of that expression among seniors coming out in the future.
In fact, we're going to talk about that in the next section in our next 15-minute segment. On RLTV, I spent quite a bit of time studying the programs, watching the videos, which are basically, many of them are available online. And one in particular caught my attention. That was one that was done with Encore's Jim Palmer and newsman and Meet the Press host Tim Russert, which I thought was profound. This must have been done very close to the time that Tim Russert passed away.
That's correct.
But he commented about what he learned from life. And he said, this is what I share with my son. Work hard, laugh often, keep your honor. And I thought that was a poignant metaphor, if you will, for an aging group of generations moving into the future. Work hard, laugh often, keep your honor.
I think you're right.
I write about Tim in my new book. I actually have a chapter because he, to me, is somewhat of a paradigmatic baby boomer male. But I think it's important to recognize that RLTV is bringing forward people like this, icons of the boomer generation in their various stages of life and in their various career areas, to help create more of a collective mindset about the potential and the possibilities of aging as we go forward.
Well, and one of the things that I want to get, one of the reasons why I want this network to be well distributed and well positioned is it won't be your traditional rerun network. It's going to be a network that deals with all kinds of inspirational issues. The other day I was listening to Diane Rehm. She was interviewing Andy Williams.
Oh,
it was a great interview.
Yeah.
A great interview. And the thrust of the interview, and this is what I think would take place day in and day out on our television network, is Andy was talking about the changes that took place in his life when he got his breaks, his song Moon River, and what when he used to be with his family, and then he went on his own, and the singing the battle hymn of the Republic at John Kennedy's funeral in New York. Just really a moving interview, and it will bring back history and memory and passion of what it took for a man like Andy Williams to live his life. And you come back and you listen to something like that, and it kind of grows the respect that you have for how we went through our lives in our country. And that's the piece that I want to get a television channel that will celebrate that part of it, all of us as we get older every day. And I really believe that we need that.
I agree that we do need that. And I think about Andy Williams, and I think a very fond time in my life when he was one of my family's favorite to watch. And I had the unique encounter with his wife, Claudine Longer, in Aspen, Colorado one time, and felt connected in that way. I saw him. But let me get to a point that you've touched upon, John, and that is that obviously it's in all of our interests that RLTV becomes as widely available as possible and as easily available as possible. Is there anything that our listeners can do? I noticed that I'm based in Denver, and I have been taking the basic cable package, which I'm immediately upgrading so that I can now get RLTV, because in the basic package, I could not get that. And unfortunately, to my great frustration, you can't do an a la carte, I'll take that one, that one, that one, and that one. because I can guarantee in my basic package, I could lose about half of the channels that they forced me to look at. Is there anything that we can do as individual viewers to try to improve? I would like to see RLTV, for example, available in all packages that Comcast offers. Is there anything we can do?
Yeah, I mean, if the most important thing you could do is send a note to your carrier, and whether it's Comcast, Cablevision, Time Warner, if you just say, please put RLTV on your basic package. It's a program that honors my life, and it's something that I want. All I got to have is a short note like that. We got about 30,000 of them that were sent out a few years ago when we had kind of a campaign. But anybody that's a listener that would take the time to drop a note to their cable carrier can go to the local office, doesn't have to go nationally, just send it to your local office and say, please give us retirement living television. And, you know, let us have an opportunity to share in that level of programming. And that's what it takes to move this along.
Okay, you got my pledge to do it. In fact, we're in negotiations right now. I live in a community of 151 households, most of whom are over the age of 50. And we did a deal with Comcast several years ago. And I have a strong interest because obviously now that I'm much better acquainted with the network and unfortunately have not been receiving my own cable viewing, I am now definitely interested in seeing that happen. For those of you who are listening, I encourage you to do the same thing, and because I think you should have choice in your basic cable package and certainly have the programming that reflects your own lifestyle and the interests that you want to follow in your TV viewing. Further, in the meantime, definitely go to rl.tv, and you can see many of the wonderful programs that this network is producing and showcasing. So we're going to break again for just a few seconds. We'll come right back. We're going to transition into more of the political advocacy areas that it's important that we who are over the age of 50 start thinking about, particularly with the leadership of RLTV and our special guest. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back. We are talking today with a very special guest who has been a leader throughout this long last 30 years in terms of retirement housing and now programming designed for boomers and seniors, John Erickson. And we were certainly starting to talk about RLTV. One thing that happened very unique that definitely caught my attention in the last few weeks is that RLTV and John and his team launched an initiative called Prime Votes, the national forums. One program is hosted by Cokie Roberts of broadcast fame. And the purpose of the program is to cover all the issues that are important to all of us, this great number of people aging past 50 and 60 in the areas of healthcare, education, the environment, Social Security, what to do in this long economic downturn, and making our voices heard in Washington. So there was a national TV campaign. There was much programming available on RLTV. I know that John toured many of the national media outlets. And so I'm going to ask now, John, do you feel our politicians started taking notice of the efforts that were undertaken through September and October to make them aware of the priority they should be thinking about in terms of our advocacy?
I certainly did not see much of it in the September-October timeframe. President Obama was still out giving speeches at colleges and universities thinking that this was going to make a difference, and there was very little attention paid to the seniors. And what I was trying to raise the awareness of is, guys, the reason you don't get a ticket to go back to Washington is because you aren't listening to the people that are speaking the loudest, the strongest, and have the most to say about this subject, and that's senior America. So I actually put the Prime Vote initiative into retirement living, not to get seniors out to vote because they vote on their own. I put it there to focus to Congress that this change that you're going to experience come January is clearly about not listening to the people, and you can do all you want and just pretend like these seniors, oh, well, they vote all the time, and you can take the Madison Avenue approach that, oh, the Republicans are Republicans and the Democrats are Democrats, so they'll never change. It's not true. They are the most conscientious, intelligent, research-oriented group of our population, and that's the reason their numbers show up in masses in a midterm election. They know who their congressmen are, and they know whether they're happy with them or whether they're not. They know what they voted on. And so I look at it that this was my way of getting a message out to Congress that your ticket to come back every 2 years is really dependent upon your listening to the people, and you're not doing that right now. And I think that's coming across. I'll tell you whether we were successful when I start to see how things shape up in January. If it's more business as usual, we're all in the private club and we don't have to pay attention again, we'll make note of that and we'll be one of the first voices that represents the fact that you didn't learn from this. But I suspect it's going to go the other way. I think that we're going to raise some political issues that are going to be scary. There's no possible way that we can take Social Security from 58 million households to over 100 million households and have that paid for by the current workforce. There's no way we can take 40 million Americans in Medicare and move that number to 80 plus million and not run out of money when we already have 18% of our GDP going to health care. So then that begs the question, what are we going to do?
That is an important question.
Yeah, so one of the things that we want to host on retirement living is a detailed documentary on the promises of Social Security, starting from when it came into being in the 39 all the way through at every point that it was politically changed, what the motivation of that change was and what damage it did to the promise. And the thing that causes the most trouble right now is Social Security is not that impaired as a program, but it is impaired financially because the federal government took the entire trust fund and spent it. There is no money in Social Security, not a dime. And in fact, this year, they had to put, for the first time ever, they had to put money in. So all the money that seniors paid into Social Security for all of their life, it's gone. It's spent. And we're borrowed up to the hilt. We're borrowed to the maximum in our country almost. And so how are we going to fund the promise? And in the past, from 1980s on, we said we'll fund it off of the current workers. But can you take and double the number of Social Security recipients and shrink the workforce and expect them to pay that difference?
Well, you know, as I recall in the time of the Greenspan Commission in 1983, the Social Security percent of pay was raised to 12.4%, ostensibly to collect not only the funds needed to support the retirement population at that time, the Social Security beneficiaries of that time, the parents and older siblings of the boomers, but also to put enough money away to pretty much anticipate the retirement of the boomers. But as you said, the money was borrowed against by Congress with IOUs that may be worthless in the form of treasury bonds, and they used it to make up deficits in other parts of their budget. So a lot of baby boomers are sitting around going, oh, wait a minute, I just paid Social Security for the last 40 years, and you're telling me the system's broke.
So Brent, you're exactly right. So in 83, the Greenspan Commission did a good thing, saying we wanted to make sure that there is a fiscally sound approach here to how this is working. But what they didn't do is tell you the sleight of hand. And by the way, by allowing the federal government to use the money in the trust fund for their own general accounting, it bankrupted the entire system. But they didn't tell us that. That was a sleight of hand back then that nobody cared about. And the only reason we care about it now is because it's going to fall apart. It's mm-hmm. This year was the first year we've had to actually fund Social Security because not enough money was coming in. And the real problem is that in the next 20 years, it's a disaster.
Yep. Well, you know, I've been pretty passionate about this issue as well, John. In fact, I debated our former governor of Colorado, Dick Lamb, who I have a great deal of respect for. He's a three-time governor, but he's been a high-profile critic of the, particularly the healthcare system. So I had an opportunity to debate him, and it was one of mutual respect. We have differing views, but those views they're not about you're right and I'm wrong. They're about different scenarios about the future. And one of the scenarios that I think about, coming back to your engagement into the lifestyles of seniors and how they can be more robust and effective, and one of those areas is that 70% of the boomer generation has indicated, both in surveys done by AARP and MetLife, that they want to continue working beyond the age of 65. They want to be vital. They want to be engaged. They want to create businesses. They want to have meaningful jobs. Some of those jobs might be modestly compensated for voluntary work. But we have ageism. We have job discrimination. So one way to address the shortfall of the Social Security Trust Fund is to keep people working longer. But that is confronted by the fact that try to find a job after 55, unless you're a C-level executive, good luck. So what are your thoughts about that's one of the things that we could change the perceptions of and possibly improve the way the numbers read by having more people work longer.
Right. And so the politicians would facetiously say, well, that just means we'll have a lot more Walmart greeters, you know, as if that was what we're all supposed to do in the end of our life.
Right.
Hey, guys, give me a break. That's not what I live my life for.
No, and I don't want to supersize that for you, sir.
That's right. And so you're right. The automobile industry has virtually no employment for people in their late 50s. You know, they've virtually closed that down. And so if you were an auto worker and you're 55, you're not going to get more employment. And so, you know, I look at it and say, okay, you can make these things up. And yes, there will be a lot of people who will start small businesses and will become entrepreneurial. And we'll definitely get a fair amount of that, you know, people running a little shop and creating a community value. And that'll be good for the country. But on the other hand, we have a bigger structural deficit defect than anybody in Congress is even talking about. And we don't even disclose to people what the history of this defect is. And everybody kind of covers it up. And every time I hear a congressman talk about the Social Security Trust Fund is solid, I said, trust fund? You can trust only two things. There's no money in the fund, and there's nothing there. I mean, there's nothing to trust. And so, but everybody pretends, because we represent the federal government, that we're safe. And they won't speak openly and say, yeah, we screwed this up. We used all the money to operate the country for the last 25 years that you guys paid in, and we didn't reserve enough to take care of you.
Well, it's obviously, it's a multi-layered issue, very complicated, and I certainly applaud your decision that this debate needs to be fully expressed and varying points of view brought forward. Our colleague, I think you know Mark Friedman. He is the author of passionate books about how boomers can change America by continuing to be engaged with their voluntary commitments after retirement or in tandem with their working years. But he said there's a lot of scenario planning going on by looking in the rearview mirror. And there are a lot of different ways to look at the future in terms of how we can take 1 in 3 American adults over the age of 50 and create contribution across the lifespan much later into life. And we have a generation saying that's what they want to do. they want to continue to be engaged. And then there's the brass tacks fact that, depending on who you look at, 25 to 30 million boomers have net assets of $10,000 or less. So we have a whole large group of people that must be engaged. And no, there's not enough jobs in Walmart or McDonald's to accommodate all these people. So we have to change the paradigms.
Yeah, I do want to say, though, that there's a little bit of an aberration in the way we present statistics about boomers. Most generations did not accumulate their wealth until the last 10 years of their work career. Up until the last 10 years, they were involved everywhere from diapers to college funds. And it was in the last 10 years of retirement that almost all of the wealth gets accumulated. The boomers are just entering that last 10 years. Many of them are. Some of them are at the end of it, the leading edge. We call them the alpha boomers, are the ones that are getting into the 65 range. But I'm not as worried about the boomer population being poor. I think they will accumulate substantial wealth. This recession was a setback, but I think they'll recover from that in the next 10 years. On the other hand, they're going to face some even more extraordinary problems, in that even though they might have accumulated, if Social Security fails them as a safety net and Medicare starts to fail them on the healthcare side, then you're going to add huge new burdens to their planning structure. And that's the thing that worries me. They were planning on a support system on the government side that was stable, and it's not going to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, this conversation will continue. We're going to take one final break and be back in just a few seconds. And we're going to continue the discussion and get John's ideas, further ideas about the future and what the nature of retirement might become, if we, in fact, will even be using that word in 5 or 10 years. But let's take a break and we'll be right back. If you want to continue to explore the availability of a vast amount of information and certainly motivational program, be sure to go to rl.tv. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you for sticking with us. This is Brent Green. I am pleased to be hosting today our guest, John Erickson. And by the way, I'd like you to have an active involvement in this conversation. If you have questions or comments that you would like to share, be sure to send me an email. It's brent@bgassociates.com. And I will be sure to get back to you, and we may include your comments and questions in future shows that we will be broadcasting. So, John, as we've been discussing, certainly in the last segment, based on what you're seeing right now, what do you think is likely to change significantly over the next few years with respect to quote-unquote retirement, given that the population of boomers are definitely the alpha boomers or the leading edge boomers are moving into that life stage very rapidly? What are you thinking is going to change significantly?
Well, the biggest change is that we're going to run out of service employment. You know, you can't take 40 million or 50 more million people, households, and say, you know, I'm old enough, I'm not going to cut my grass anymore. I'm not going to clean my gutters anymore. I can't go up a ladder anymore. I'm going to need some health care. I shouldn't be driving. You start naming it. The reality is that the first thing we're going to run out of is service employment. It's going to become as scarce as you can possibly imagine. And the cost is going to go through the ceiling. All service employment, not highly skilled, it doesn't have to be real technical, but general service employment will dramatically rise in cost.
That is something that, of course, has everybody concerned, like the cost of assisted living and nursing care. Some are trying to plan ahead for that by buying insurance for that purpose, but you're absolutely correct. There's going to have to be
more than that, home maintenance and vacations and, you know, everything where we plan on service people, it's going to get very expensive. And so that's one huge worry, because you just can't shift that many millions of people from one structure where they were independent and servicing themselves to a place where they're going to want services, and say, okay, well, we'll just see what happens. That's why Ken Dykewell, in his book on the age wave, talked about the fact that when he went to high school, he had to go to a double shift high school in California. And yet everybody in California knew how many people were alive for 16 years before he got there, and no one built a school. And we're doing the same stuff over and over today. We know how many people are not going to be able to mow their grass. We know how many people are not going to be able to clean their gutters, do windows on the outside, that should leave their driving and need support services. And we're going to sit back and say, golly, that's surprising. We don't have any service employees.
Do you see any hope? I think there's certainly a whole category of industry, even Intel's make a major play into this area, and that is technology. Now, obviously, technology is not going to wash the windows or clean out the gutters, but a lot of so-called caretakings, there's people that aspire to create technology that can be very, very capable of measuring how people are doing in their own caretaking. How many times they open the refrigerator, if they leave the stove on, how much they move around their house, and things like that. Do you see any opportunity in that area from your point of view?
We watch that a lot. We've actually been test pilot sites for a lot of this technology. And my own feeling on it is it doesn't do very much for us. It tells us that mom's a lot worse off than we thought.
Yeah.
But we should have known that anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, she's getting up a lot more times in the middle of the night than we thought she was. She only told us about a few. Okay, well, what you're going to find is you already knew most of what you needed to know. If she's not taking her medicine, you know, getting a barcode scan on your computer saying, Mom forgot to take her pain medicine this morning, it's not going to give you a lot of extra time. You're still going to need to intervene, and you're going to still need to service that individual. And technology will not become a significant replacement, but it will do. It'll give us more qualitative detail on how important the change is. But we're still going to need people to make those services.
Certainly.
And that's what would worry me. I'm going through that, you know, as we speak with my wife's mother in terms of medication and, you know, and frailty and all the rest of it. It's not an easy time. And
no,
you need constantly more services when you get to that point.
Absolutely. And I've been was the caretaker for my parents for their last 8 years, so I'm very acquainted with the demands it places. And one of the things we're facing with the boomer generation uniquely is about 20% of boomer women did not have any children. That compares with about 9% of their mother's generation, the World War II generation. So we're going to have a lot of baby boomers out there who do not have children that provide that first, you know, line of defense, if you will, to all the problems that occur with aging. And that's going to be unique, too, with respect to this generation.
Absolutely. So if my theory is right and the boomers come out of their work career cycles with a fair amount of savings, which I think they will, and even though we're in a downtime right now, I think they recovered from that. The reality is they're going to have to amortize those savings to get service employment in their later years, and the competition will be very high. So some of the things that will do economically, it will change the issue of the single family home being something valuable. I think you will see America downsizing. And they're going to realize, I can't afford the big lawn. I can't afford the extra space. I can't afford. And as costs continue to rise, you're going to see a natural economy occur. And that's where those naturally occurring retirement communities, people moving back into the cities, into local neighborhoods where you can have little shops and stuff. That would actually all be good for America. I think it'll also dramatically affect our immigration policy. We're going to need to have immigration. And we need immigration not at the college level. We need it at the service level and the college level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And our America's unions are going to have to stand down and let some supply demand work here rather than just say, oh, no, let's block everybody from coming into America so we can make a little more service employment money.
And so, okay.
I see those as being the big substantive changes in front of us.
Let me also ask on the kind of the RLTV side of the equation, do you feel that advocacy for older adults, their value and their votes will pay off? In other words, are you optimistic about the signposts that this so-called senior lobby is going to gain significant force and command significant attention from our policymakers, that we will be able to take control of some of these huge problems that we're confronting as an aging society?
Well, that's certainly a big part of what we wanted RLTV to do. We wanted it to become a collective voice of the debate on senior America. And if there's going to be sacrifice required in Social Security and Medicare, I don't think senior America is against the sacrifice. They've sacrificed for our country and for their kids and for their grandkids all their life. But they want the sacrifice to be fair, and they want it to be substantive, and they want it to make a better life for their grandchildren. And so getting the senior population satisfied is going to be a huge component going forward. And I think you have to do that by aggregating them into a place where they have a voice, a space, and a method of communicating. One of the problems seniors suffer from in America right now is that they don't have a lobbyist group. They don't have any giant aggregator. And so their only method of demonstrating power is what they did on November 2nd. They went to the polls and said, you don't get a ticket to go home. I'm sending somebody else to Washington. Well, I think now you're going to see more and more aggregation. And a retirement living isn't going to aggregate in the polarity side of saying, well, I got more people on the Republican and I've got more red and I've got more blue. It's going to aggregate on the side of, this is what worries senior America. And if you want to go to Washington, you have to solve these issues. And that's what we want to put in front. So that's why I would do documentaries on the total platform of Social Security and how much trouble we're in and what are the options. I would do the same on Medicare and any other social issue, immigration being one of them. You know, we need to have a healthier attitude on immigration in our country, particularly for college students and bright people, but we still make it very miserable to come to America, even if you're hardworking.
Oh, I know that. I have good friends, Canadians, both lawyers that took them 10 years to become citizens of the U.S. They're both teaching at the University of Denver now. They've recognized as worldwide experts on arson law. I mean, they had everything and every pedigree item you can think of, and it took 10 frustrating, tear-producing years for them to become successful citizens of the U.S. So,
I've employed a number of young people from around the world, India, South Africa, you know, South America, and we give these people these six-year visas and the rest and then deport them.
Yep.
And they're some of the hardest working, most committed people that we can find. And I think America's got to have the attitude, we want more of those people. We want hardworking, college graduated, industrious people. We don't want to say, well, they can work as long as my job is better than theirs. That's the wrong attitude. If we don't want to work, let them do it.
Right. And another thing is that we can look at Japan, which has much more restrictive immigration policies than the U.S. and is enough older so that we can see what we will look like 10 years from now. And with immigration policies that are, you know, prohibitive, they're struggling in Japan with issues that we don't have to struggle with if we have a good, vital, well-qualified, younger workforce coming into the U.S. from other parts of the world. So we're definitely
going to need them. We're going to need the workers. We're going to need the service. We're going to need the intelligence side. And so I'd say the one asset that America still has is it's still got a lot of land, still got a lot of opportunity. But we've got to open that opportunity instead of becoming self-protectionist and saying, close the doors to everybody else. I want to keep my job as long as I can. It's the wrong attitude. Open the doors. Be competitive. Work hard, as you said from Tim Rustard. Work hard and live with honor. I think that's a much better philosophy.
Right. Well, I Again, I knew that when we started this conversation, John, an hour would not be enough, and it certainly hasn't been, because guess what? It's over. But I definitely want to thank you for your contributions to the field of aging, to the future of retirement, your many fantastic stories about your own journey, and most particularly your insights and wisdom. Thank you so much for spending the time sharing with us today. I very much appreciate it.
Well, Brent, I've enjoyed my time with you, and as you can tell, it's my passion in life.
Yes.
And that makes it easy.
Yeah. Well, you can discover more about the subjects we've discussed today by visiting John Erickson's RLTV website. You can visit erickson.com. And it turns out, too, that John is a blogger on Huffington Post. I just incidentally put up a post this week on the future of Social Security. John, so we're thinking about many of the same issues, but you can find a vast amount of information that this man is sharing and his leadership. Again, we're honored to have him with us today. Next time, our guest will be David Kravit, Executive Vice President of the Canadian media empire called Zoomer Media Limited. Zoomer Media owns the Canadian version of AARP. That's called CARP in their world. A number of major 50-plus oriented websites, cable channels, radio stations, and an upscale magazine called Zoomer. And by the way, Zoomer is Boomer with Zip, in case you want to know. Over the years, David has participated at the most senior levels in the creation and placement of over $5 billion worth of media advertising. His industry experience covers every category you can think of. Also, David is the author of a book called The New Old, which details how the baby boomers and older are completely reinventing the process of aging, very much in line with what we've been discussing with John Erickson today. The implications for companies, government, and society as a whole. So I look forward to your joining us again. Again, if you need to get in touch, I'd like to hear from you at brent@bgassociate.com or visit any number of my websites, which are easy to find. So I look forward to your questions and comments, and I look forward to seeing you again next week.
You've been listening to Generation Reinvention with your host, Brent Green. Visit Brent at his website at generationreinvention.com. And for archive shows, be sure to visit his show page here on the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is, have fun, make money.